James Agee called her work unpretentious, while others have categorized it as street photography. But as Francine Prose points out in her introduction to Helen Levitt's most recent collection, this master photographer was merely making the difficult look easy. Crosstown from Powerhouse Books features images the artist is best known for, city kids at play and their grown-up counterparts caught in momentary gestures. Helen Levitt has had solo exhibitions at major museums. Her work is included in the celebrated Family of Man exhibit in 1955. That was at the Museum of Modern Art. And her previous books are Mexico City, A Way of Seeing, and In the Streets. I'm very pleased that her latest brings her to New York and Company today. Hi.
Hello.
You certainly get some heavy hitters to write introductions for your books. This one is by Francine Prose. James Agee wrote for A Way of Seeing. Mm-hmm. Because they're fans or friends?
AG was a friend. And Francine is somebody I was introduced to, but I read a number of her books, and I think she's one of the best American writers. Mm-hmm. And when she agreed to write the introduction, I was very happy.
Writer of Household Saints and other books. You collaborated with James Agee on a short documentary, In the Street.
And Janice Loeb. Mm-hmm. Don't forget Janice Loeb.
Okay, I don't want to forget her. that was what, 1945?
We started maybe a little around that time, and then we stopped to make The Quiet One. That was a feature film about a delinquent kid, and then we went back. And the thing is, A.G. went out with me when we first decided to try to make a film, and he shot some material.
He also shot footage.
Yeah, I gave him the camera, and he shot some stuff. Everything he shot is still in the film. He was wonderful. He's just a natural genius. And but after that, he got busy. So my friend Janice Loeb and I did the rest of the film. We would go out whenever we felt like, walking around and taking pictures. It was just a way of having fun.
Did you see making films as an outgrowth of what you'd been doing with still photography?
Yeah.
Because the footage that you supplied Rick Burns of Harlem in the New York series, it just looks like every frame is perfectly framed. I don't know how you do it, but every one of them could be a still photograph and be immediately identifiable as a Helen Levitt.
Every frame, every shot is that doesn't make sense.
I mean, what you do is you
just go out and you press a button and
it happens.
And it happens, you know.
Well, a lot of people go out and press buttons and they don't come up with good film.
Well, you have to have the material. You have to know what to shoot. That's all. You point the camera at what's interesting.
The first time I picked up this book, Crosstown, I went through it in one sitting, and it was interesting to see how much New York City street culture has changed over
the
years.
That's right.
How many years are represented in this book?
Well, from the around 38 until sometime in the 90s when I took the last picture.
And you...
But I didn't work consistently all this time. I've had a lot of illness, one thing and another.
You were
and
retired
I, then I was in, went into film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But still, we have 174 images in this book.
Yeah.
You must have taken...
Well, I took a lot of pictures.
Millions or so. No? Well, did you? How did you wind up choosing the ones here? Some of them are very famous, so I'm sure you just felt you had to put them in.
You just know which are the best ones, and over the years you've looked at them a lot, and you... It's part of it's like shooting. It's another way of selecting. The kind of shooting I do on the street is a selections thing. It's a collecting, and that's related to it.
And you don't go out with any preconceived notion as to what you want to get?
No.
Because some photographers have. Evans, did,
oh, yeah,
for example.
And you can do good, very good work that way. Look at Julia Margaret Cameron, gorgeous portraits.
So,
but this kind of work, you go out and you don't know what you're going to find.
Well, the picture on the cover, which has been reproduced many times, of a woman in a checkered jacket and then an unmatching checkered skirt looking into a checker cab.
Yeah.
it almost feels like it had to have been set up.
I know, it looks that way.
So when you saw her, immediately did you spot the fact that you had all these different checkerboards?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Very often I'll take a picture and not see something that I'll see later when I make a print that adds to the picture. But you, very often you don't see the whole thing. But this was, it hit you in the eye, so it was so obvious to me.
How are they sequenced in this book? Is it simply chronological?
Yeah, the early pictures, and then the middle years pictures, and the at the very end of the last pictures I took.
And when you went through them, did you see changes in yourself reflected in those pictures?
I don't think I changed very much. No.
What you liked then, you still like.
I know I still like. Yeah.
One photographer told me that in going back and doing new prints for a book, he discovered that some of the negatives that he had rejected when he was younger now looked a lot better than some of the pictures.
Exactly right. That's exactly what happened to me. Yeah. And if you see the early edition of A Way of Seeing, there are pictures in this book, in the new book, that are not in A Way of Seeing because I didn't realize they were good.
Mm-hmm. Because
people change.
You take a lot of pictures and you don't realize at the time
what
you've done in some cases.
Yeah, because there's a difference between being 25 years old and being 85 years old. You've accumulated a lot of not just knowledge but know-how and everything. Mm-hmm. In the years, your eye changes and your...
So were you surprising yourself looking at some of these old negatives and saying,
I didn't know I did that. Yeah, this looks pretty good. I think I'll make a print of this one. Yeah.
Were all the pictures taken in New York City? All the pictures that are in this book?
Yeah.
And did you concentrate on certain neighborhoods?
I concentrated on Spanish Harlem in those days because everybody seemed to be out on the street in the hot weather. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot going on, a lot of activity, as opposed to, you can understand that very easily. If you walk down Park Avenue, you don't see anybody outside. When you go to a neighborhood like that, everybody's outside, or used to be, mm-hmm. not anymore.
But you've lived in Greenwich Village for some time now. I'm not aware of very many shots.
I don't know. I haven't been shooting. No.
In the village.
No.
Though people are often out there, it's just a different.
Well,
out.
People are out there walking around, or they're going to the store. In the early days up in Spanish Harlem, people were outdoors. They didn't have air conditioning in the summer. They sat out on the stoop. The children all played on the street. They didn't have TV to come in. They didn't have playgrounds with basketball. Between basketball and TV, you don't see those kids running around on the street anymore.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Helen Levitt, and there's a new collection of her photographs just been published by Powerhouse called Crosstown, a gorgeous book, beautifully reproduced photographs. They almost look like the originals. You're listening to New York & Company on AM 820 WNYC in New York and 93.9 FM, also WMYE at 91.5 FM there. I think I got it all in there. You also took pictures in Mexico for other things, and I wonder if you see any similarity between shooting street life in Mexico and what people do in Mexico and going up to Spanish Harlem.
Well, it's the same idea. You walk around. You have your camera ready. And if suddenly you see something that you think is meaningful to you, whatever you, and you shoot it.
But
I'm sorry, inarticulate photographer.
You're perfectly articulate. You're telling me what you do and how you think about
well,
things, but I'm curious about how you get people to even sit there for you, because I know when I was taking photography in college, mm-hmm. I would go around with my camera. The minute I put that camera up, people did things either avoid being photographed
or they'd
pose for me, and that's not what I wanted.
Well, it's no secret. I've told people many times that I had an angle viewfinder on my camera. I had a Leica, and this viewfinder was made by that company to fit the Leica, and it was called a Winkelsucher. And you could look into it and turn the camera sideways so people didn't know that you were taking a picture.
They thought you were going to take a picture of something else because you seemed to be looking at the other thing.
Yeah, so I use that a great deal. Today, when I go out, I don't use it anymore because people know much more about cameras than they did way back in the 30s. And also, they think I might be some kind of a spy.
Really?
Yeah, from the immigration department. And they get very upset. So I don't dare use that anymore.
Uh-huh. So you just do you bring around pictures to say, hey, look, this is my work. You can trust me?
No, I don't talk to the people.
Now,
I walk past people very fast. I take a quick shot and move on.
Paul Strand used to take pictures in Mexico with a camera with a false lens on it.
He looked like he was shooting
the cathedral, and he was shooting the people watching him shoot the cathedral.
Yeah.
The same idea.
That's the same idea, yeah.
So were there other photographers doing that? I haven't heard that story, that kind of thing happening very much.
I don't know. I don't know if anybody else was doing that.
You say that you were inspired to take the kinds of pictures you've taken of urban street life by Henri Cartier-Bresson, who did it in Paris with very different kinds of results. What had you been doing before that?
I had started out taking pictures of working class people. I had become politically conscious, so I thought I should reveal what goes on in the world and take pictures of poverty and working class people. And
this is during the Depression.
This is when I first started out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the early 20s, when I was in my early 20s, that must have been early 30s. So then I saw some photographs of that were made by Cartier-Bresson. And then I understood that photography can be an art, and the interesting thing is not to use it as a documentary tool, but as an art form, and which means you have to find the poetry in what you're shooting and not just the misery.
Mm-hmm. But also you find more than one thing happening at the same time. You have this photograph of these two women. One is pregnant and another woman is holding these milk bottles up to her breasts. And I don't know whether they were posing for you or not. No. It's hard not to get the message of that picture. It just seems like a magical moment.
And you seem to be there for
so many magical moments.
Yeah.
When I see magical moments, if I have a camera with me, I always capture it the minute after the magical moment has gone
past.
Well,
that takes practice. Just takes practice. And you're too busy to go out and practice. That's why, yeah. But lots of people, when people walk around without cameras, they often see something wonderful. And they say, gee, I wish I had a camera. Mm-hmm. But that's the same idea. But when you have a camera, you have it ready. And it's, the lens is at the proper opening, and the distance is some distance that'll work for most pictures. And then, so if you see something wonderful, you can quickly grab it.
And I'm sure that you went through negatives and said, "Why did I take this picture?" Because
you
missed
throw away most of them. Yes, of course.
Now, Cartier-Bresson later in life gave up photography, became a painter. Did you ever feel there was a time when you no longer wanted to take pictures?
At one point I did, yeah. I did. I thought I'd taken everything I could possibly do, and my eye got dull, and I thought, this is it. So I stopped for a while.
You felt like you'd burned out, in effect?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But then I realized that wasn't so, and I went back, because there's an infinite number of things that happen, and you can't exhaust it.
Mm-hmm. So you started seeing things again that inspired you, and you realized you wanted to go out with your camera again.
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel different when you went out? Were you seeing different kinds of things?
No.
Mm-hmm. So the same things that have always made that you've always found interested continued to interest you?
Yes.
These pictures are pretty much all in black and white. There are color shots later. Do you tend to see things in black and white? Do you see the images in black and white when you're thinking about what a picture's going to be
like? No, I see things in color, but somehow I have an automatic switch in me some way so that I can do it in black and white or color, but...
Because a lot of things that look really great in color, if you shoot them in black and white film, the whole point seems to be lost when you make the print.
Well, I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, that was my experience. I would, when I was taking a photography class, I'd go out there and I'd say, oh, this is great. I'd take a picture, and then I'd realize that it was great because of all sorts of color things
because
that were happening.
The color,
and there
yeah.
I was
yeah,
shooting, yeah, with yeah. a black and white print yeah. that really looked yeah. dull and didn't have any much meaning to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to actually know how it's going to look in black and white.
Yeah, yeah. All this comes down to the word experience.
Mm-hmm. How did a lot of photographers know each other in those days?
Did who?
The photographers all know each other? I know you shared a dark room with
any.
Walker Evans at
I didn't
one
know
point.
Any. I knew only Walker Evans, and I met Paul Strand, but I was not a friend of his. I met a couple of other people, but I hardly remember them.
Evans, as I said earlier, usually had an idea that he wanted before he took a picture, and you didn't, and you just let things unfold before your eyes. Did you?
He took some wonderful street stuff in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
He took marvelous street pictures.
So if you're a good photographer, you can work in any approach that there is.
Maybe. I don't know if I could do as well photographing the material he did.
Mm-hmm. Even with that attachment, it's hard to imagine that in the old days you would go unnoticed in some of the neighborhoods you visited. You must have looked like an outsider. Do you think that they just...
No, I looked like them.
Uh-huh.
I looked just like everybody in the neighborhood. I wasn't a tall, gorgeous blonde. I was just an ordinary-looking lady, walk around, and nobody noticed me.
And yet there are only about... 8 or 9 pictures in this whole collection where people are looking directly at you.
Well, that was on purpose, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You were pleased when they didn't look directly at you.
Mm-hmm.
My guest is Helen Levitt, and her fabulous collection of photographs covering the span of her career, 65 years or so, is now published by Powerhouse. It's called Crosstown. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break here on WNYC at AM 820 at 93.9 FM, also WNYE at 91.5 FM. I hope you can stay with us. We're back with Helen Levitt, this fabulous book covering the span of her career, published by Powerhouse, is called Crosstown, and it has these amazing photographs of children. The first half of Crosstown is devoted almost completely to pictures of children. I've heard somewhere that you don't particularly like kids.
That's not true.
I
like kids as much as anybody else. I don't love them exclusively. That's not why I went out and shot the pictures of children. Pictures of children were made because the children were doing things. This was in the old days when everybody was out in the street. Now, the adults would be sitting down somewhere. The children would be active. They'd be running around, inventing games.
Climbing,
doing everything. And it was material, wonderful material, for photography.
You often caught the kids doing things that would have upset their parents if they'd known.
Don't think so. I don't think the parents watched over those kids like that. No, they were good street kids. They knew how to take care of themselves.
One of your most famous pictures is of kids on the lintel an apartment house, a tenement house. They've climbed pretty high. Another one has them in a tree. I don't know. I'd be scared if my kids had climbed up there.
Yeah, I would be too, but I don't think they'd worry about the kids.
And then there are these amazing photographs of kids in masks that... Mm. When you see those pictures reproduced again and again as classics of photography, do you feel a certain kind of pride and ownership?
No, I get sort of bored. I wish they'd reproduce some of my newer work. Yeah. I've seen enough of those.
Is that a problem for you? Because you've said that to me off the air as well, that it's kind of boring to think about the old days, and yet that's what people often talk about. But that's how people first came to know you.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Is that one of the reasons you stopped taking pictures of kids?
Oh, no, I didn't stop taking pictures
of
kids.
Well, we see fewer of them later.
Stopped taking pictures of everything at one point, because as I said, I thought I'd done it, but then I realized that I really hadn't scratched the surface.
Is that one of the reasons that you also started working in color, or was it just that color had become so ubiquitous?
Well, color, but no, it was just that the whole point of my pictures is that it's reality, and you're not making up anything. And what could be more real than color? After all, black and white is something of an abstraction. We don't see in black and white. We see in color.
But some photographers prefer that abstraction. They feel that
that abstraction
and that they're kind of
limited
by the color.
Yeah.
But there also are ways to tame the color, and you seem to have done that.
Well, it's just I didn't go out for the color. I went out for the picture. And the color was like a gift of God. The color comes in and adds something to it. I must say it's much easier to take pictures in color than black and white, because it's seductive. It has this wonderful element of like painting. It's just gorgeous.
When you were filmmaking, you worked as a film editor and a camera operator during that period that you quit making pictures. Were you also working in color?
No. Not in film, no.
You resumed your career in 1959, but all the photographs you took during the following 2 years were stolen, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a Guggenheim to take pictures in color. And I had them in a box in my house, and there was a big robbery, and they took the box with all the pictures in it.
Including the negatives?
They were slides.
Uh-huh.
And I had no dupes.
Did they ever turn up again? Do you know?
Nope. Happened to have a couple of second-rate ones around that were pretty good, so I could use them. But the main ones were all taken.
So 2 years of your work just disappeared at that point.
Oh, yeah.
That had to be a discouraging thing to happen. Did it stop you for a while again?
No.
How would you characterize the difference between your earlier photographs and your later work?
How would I characterize what?
The difference. You said you wish people would talk more about your more recent
work. The later work, I think the later work is more complex. There's more design in it than before.
Simply because you're bringing all of those years of experience? Or what about the years that you didn't work, do you think that you started thinking differently about how to design a photograph?
No, I didn't think about it at all.
You don't?
It's all instinctive. I don't think about it.
So it's only after you look at the image that you realize that this thing is working well and this other one didn't?
Yeah.
Are you still snapping these days?
A little.
Have you been downtown, or is that not the sort of thing you'd be interested in doing?
No, no point in my going. There are too many photographers who are taking fantastic pictures, and they don't need any more from me.
You went to Mexico at one point. Now, a lot of American artists were going to Mexico. Mm-hmm. Paul Strand had gone before.
Oh, yeah.
what did you think you were going to find in Mexico City? Did you think you'd find images that would be all that different?
Well, I'd seen. Wasn't it Strand who made that movie in Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that, and then I saw some of the Cartier-Bresson pictures of Mexico. That they're hair-raising. They're so gorgeous. And I thought I'd love to try to go there. The place is full of such beauty.
And a lot of American artists. I don't know if you met Strand there, or Isamo Noguchi, or Marcin Hartley, or Milton Avery, later Joseph Albers, Robert Motherwell. Many American artists went there.
Went there, sure.
You think that they were all looking for some special kind of inspiration that only...
I have no idea why anybody would want to.
When you looked at those Cartier-Bresson photographs, you say they were hair-raising.
They're so beautiful.
Well, he just seems to function on another level from almost everybody else in the world.
He's a genius.
Do you ever get discouraged? Because some artists look at the work of great genius and say, I'll never be able to do that.
I'm not competitive. I'll never be great as Cartier-Bresson. I'm happy that I can do as well as I do.
Mm-hmm. Although you seem to be rather modest. Whenever people praise you, you kind of brush it off. On the other hand, you haven't stopped people from exhibiting you or publishing your photographs.
If anybody wants to, that's fine.
But do you really think that your accomplishment isn't all that great? Because that's the impression you often give.
I like what I did. I like what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy about it.
And when I'm sure there are people who come to you and say, you inspired me the same way that Cartier-Bresson inspired you. Have you ever taught?
Oh, yes. I talk to a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
young people.
Uh-huh. What kind of advice would you give a young photographer?
Go out and do your legwork.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of walking around and looking and shooting and throwing it away and going back. That's the main thing I tell young people.
Do you have favorite photographs in this book that are not necessarily the ones that everybody knows?
Well, a couple that you mentioned are
mm-hmm.
favorites. The woman with the milk bottles is one of my favorites.
Because it's such a magical moment.
That's great. And the one at the color one at the end of the children in the telephone booth squeezing in besides their mother.
Mm-hmm.
That's a favorite of mine.
There's an amazing photograph of a mother putting her head into a baby carriage.
Yeah, that's...
And she disappears, and the baby is laughing.
Yeah,
and
that's a good... Yeah, I like that. I like a lot of them.
You know, the ones that have a kind of a... in that case, it's startling and funny all at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I'm... You see, when you're young, you're interested, as I was, many people are, in what's going on in the world and how bad it is, and you feel... sorry for people, and when you get older, you sort of see the funny things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm much more interested in comedy these days.
Although I would say that there's always a social conscience in the work. Maybe it's not as apparent in them, but it's always
reality. That's why. It's nothing I invented. I'm not trying to photograph concepts or my inner feelings or any... you photograph reality, you'll get... You can't help but get that.
There are some photographs that don't have people in them, but they're not your standard... They don't represent your standard approach. It just happens once in a while you see something writing on a wall or something like that, and...
They used to be much more when I used to go out in the 30s and the kids would take the chalk from school and then they would... They draw lots of... I have a whole book of them that's called In the Street, like the film. And it's all about the children's chalk drawings, which I collected as I walked around.
Mm-hmm.
Chalk drawings and messages that they write on the walls. They were charming. They're absolutely charming.
Have you ever, like an awful lot of other photographers who have focused on the city, then suddenly felt you have to go out there and take pictures of the countryside, of nature, of some French farm village?
Have I ever done what?
Have you ever gone out there and just tried to take those beautiful pictures of nature that so many...
Oh, I was wondering what you meant by the French farm village. Yes, I often try. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at it.
You also had wanted to go to Paris for a while.
Yes, when I was young. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go very badly, but I didn't have enough money.
And then when you did have the money, why didn't you go?
I have it now, I could go, but I don't want to go now. No.
Because
at my age, I don't want to hassle with airports and baggage and hotels and whatnot.
But do you think that you would see stuff in a city like Paris or a city like Rome that you don't find in New York?
If I had an 8x10 view camera and a tripod, I would photograph the buildings. Mm-hmm. That's what you don't find in New York, those wonderful buildings they have in European cities.
Well, in the old days, when you started, most people did walk around with those 8x10
yes,
cameras. And then the Leicas and the other lighter cameras, mm-hmm. and now the SLRs. Do you still go out sometimes with the larger cameras?
I never had one. Never.
Mm-hmm. So it was always either a Leica or some single lens.
That's all I wanted to do.
Because that allows you instantaneous access to mm-hmm, the image.
That was the kind of photography that interested me most.
Did you do your own printing?
Sure.
Because mm-hmm. a lot of photographers don't.
I don't today. I no longer have a dark room. But I had a big bathroom in my apartment, and I turned that into a dark room. And I did all my printing.
Now, how many of these photographs in Crosstown are available in the... in some of the previous books. Would you see this as a retrospective
most
of your
of
New
the,
York City
most
work?
Of the ones in the beginning, which are the old ones that I took way back in the 30s and 40s, most of those are in A Way of Seeing, mm-hmm. my other book.
And then you have pictures that you took in the subway as well.
Yeah, very few of those have been reproduced.
There was a time when it was actually illegal to photograph in the subways.
I think it probably still is, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I haven't tried again.
Have you ever had somebody say to you, what are you doing? Don't
yeah,
take my picture.
Yeah, once.
Only once in your whole life?
Yeah. A fellow sat across from me. He had on a big checkered cap, and he looked very comical to me. And I got a shot of him. He said, he got angry. He said, what did you take my picture for? I said, I didn't take your picture. Why would I take your picture? He said, don't tell me. I got a camera like that at home. I know what you're doing. It was a very good camera, too.
Mm-hmm. So you just That's talked all. Yourself out of it.
Yeah.
I'm every time I open up this book, I have to tell you, there's some other miraculous shot. There's one, the picture I just opened, too, has these two young men who must be in their late teens or early 20s, standing on both sides of a doorway on one leg. They look like they're flying. And the picture across of it has a man lying across the hood of a car with a bunch of bananas in front of him. I this isn't going to mean anything to anybody who doesn't see these pictures, but they're just kind of miraculous.
Thank you. I'm awfully glad that you like them.
Well, I want to
I'm happy to know that people like my pictures.
And I suspect that a lot of them are going to get great pleasure from this book. I know I have already. It's called Crosstown, and it is published by Powerhouse. Helen Levitt, the very great photographer, has put together 176
Something
images?
Like that. Oh.
And the picture on the cover alone is worth the price of admission. Thank you again, Helen, for being with us today
Thank
on
you.
New York & Company.